You are now listening to
Chakras and Shotguns. Welcome to Chakras and Shotguns, the podcast that guides you on a journey of spiritual development and personal preparedness. I'm Jen. I was a lawyer for 11 years. Now I'm a wellness entrepreneur and yoga instructor.
And I'm Nick, a marketer, Reiki master, and prepper.
So the word shaman, it can conjure up a lot of different things, a lot of different meanings. What does it mean to you? Is it a healer from the ancient past? Is it a mystical person in an indigenous tribe somewhere? What does shamanism look like today in the modern world? So today's episode, we're getting all into shamanism, and then we're hearing from our personal shaman, my favorite shaman. Nick. But before we get into that, we want to shout out our newest Patreon member, Shaleya. Thank you so much for joining our Patreon and showing your support of the show. It really, really means a lot. If you are interested in getting to know more about how you can support Patreon, be a part of the community, get into all the extra perks and benefits and content and all of the things, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/chakrasandshotguns.
All right. Let's begin as we always do with a little breathwork meditation to put us into a mindful place. All right. So for today, I'll be taking over the breathwork. Since we're talking about shamanism really is about connecting with the natural world and connecting with our planet Earth. And so for this breathwork, I want to visualize us actually connecting our energy with the earth to allow us to be replenished and refilled. So if everyone could sit up nice and straight, find a comfortable position. You can sit or lay down. Place your hands down on your lap and just take a couple of deep breaths and gently close your eyes. So in through your nose and out through your mouth. In through the nose and out through the mouth. Let's first take a moment to just think about all that the earth provides us with. The plant life that provides us with oxygen. The plants that provide us with fruits and vegetables. The animal life that supports us as well. All of these are gifts from the earth. Just take a moment to express your gratitude for these things. Now let's all imagine our root chakra is lighting up. Just at the base of our spine is where the root chakra is located. Imagine a bright red ball of energy right below your root chakra. And for a couple of breaths, just allow that ball of energy to pulsate. Now I want you to imagine an energetic cord going from that root chakra and dropping down directly toward the earth. Visualize that red cord continuing to go down. Imagine it reaches the center of the earth and connects directly in with our planet. And just stay here for a few moments, just like a mother can nourish their baby through the umbilical cord. Allow this energetic cord to nourish your energy, replenish you, reinvigorate you. slowly begin to retract that cord, thanking the earth for its gift. Bring that cord back to your root chakra. Let's all take a couple of grounding breaths as we integrate this energy. In through the nose. And out through the mouth. In through the nose. And out through the mouth. Wiggle your fingers and toes. And slowly bring yourself back into your space. And when you're ready, gently open your eyes.
Thank you, Meg.
Of course.
Beautiful.
So this week, guys, we're diving into one of my favorite topics is Gen Previewed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a topic that I know intimately, but I think for a long time, I couldn't really articulate it very well to others.
Mm.
We're talking about shamanism. So what exactly is it and where does it come from? Let's start with the basic definition.
So you're just going to punt that to me?
Yeah.
When it's one of your favorite topics, but that's fine. I'll read it.
You're my PR major, you know, so you got the got the words right.
Okay. So shamanism is a tradition of acting as an intermediary between the physical world and the spiritual realm by navigating altered states of consciousness to interact with spirits and unseen forces. It involves healing, divination, guidance, and maintaining harmony with the natural world, which I feel like that ties into what we talked about at the very top of this episode of why we feel like we see that with indigenous cultures.
Absolutely.
Who tend to have a very strong and very deep connection mm-hmm. to nature and balance. And, you know, what are you taking from nature? What are you giving back?
Yeah.
I feel like indigenous cultures, cultures that have held on to these very, very old traditions.
Yeah.
It makes sense that we link that yeah. with shamans.
Absolutely. You make me think of the book that I'm reading right now, Braiding Sweetgrass. If you guys have not had a chance to read that book, definitely check it out. But essentially, that book talks about balancing science with the indigenous practices and how science basically is just now catching up to understanding why indigenous practices are the way they are and like why they work.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're trying to now put scientific language on top of it now when like indigenous people knew all along what was right. So it's a really dope book. So I digress though. Back to shamanism and the term shaman, it actually comes from, I think, the Tungus tribe in Siberia, right? So It's not like a word that shows up across a bunch of different cultures. We've kind of made it such, right? We kind of created this umbrella term for similar people in different cultures, but it really comes from this Siberian tribe and the etymology of the word, like if you like kind of look at their language, the word shaman translates into one who sees.
Mm.
So if you think about like seeing into the other side or seeing into the natural world and kind of like pulling out these things that science is just now trying to explain,
okay.
That's where shaman comes from. As I mentioned, the word has now become this umbrella term for practitioners who kind of work with nature and have like these nature-based traditions. One of the things that I think is really dope about shamanism is that, again, it's not owned by any one particular culture and that there's all of these cultures who were separated geographically who kind of had very similar practices when it came to working with nature
and
a lot of this work. So
cultures that had no communication with each other.
Feasibly, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let's get a taste of these different commonalities. So here are a few descriptions of different shamanic practices from cultures around the world. So in Europe, you have the Sami people mm-hmm. or the Sami shamans, and they utilize a practice called, now y'all bear with me, child, because it's y'all got some names up in here, boy, in this episode. So give me some grace. Okay. So the Sami people utilize a practice called joik.
Okay. I think you did all right.
Which, I don't know why it makes me think of yeet, but that's neither here nor there. It's a form of rhythmic chanting or singing, often accompanied by a frame drum to induce trances, so like a trance-like state, a hypnotic type of state. And so in these trances, the Sami people commune with the spirits of nature, seeking guidance on matters of health, hunting, and the future. Mm-hmm. That's Europe. Moving on to Asia, the Yakut shamans, also called shamans, undertake elaborate rituals to enter trances, again, trances, and journey through the spirit world. We just did that. Heard about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. These rituals often involve drumming, singing, and specific movements, and are believed to grant shamans access to different spiritual realms. Okay. Moving on to Africa, the motherland. San shamans, referred to as Sangoma, traditionally enter trances through rhythmic music and dance. This often involves playing instruments like the shantu, a musical bow, and engaging in repetitive movements. Then let's go to Polynesia. I feel like Carmen Sandiego. We have the Maori Tahunga, who are spiritual leaders and healers who utilize intricate chants known as karakia and specific rituals to mediate between the physical and spiritual realms. So kind of like go back and forth. So as you can see, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah,
it kind of got repetitive at some point.
I love it. I love it. I love that. And there are some theories that there was maybe some communication between some of these cultures, like they were getting on boats and seeing each other. But I don't think like fundamentally these like religious practices or spiritual practices were really being transferred across like these lands. I think there was someone who had a gift, who had like a propensity to be able to connect with the spirit world, and they kind of in each of those cultures rose to like the place of the shaman, right? So like I think about the movie Black Panther, right? They always talk about like the first Black Panther. Obviously this is fictionalized, but like I think it is a good similarity, I guess, to real life, where like the first one, he got the first plant, and then he was like a warrior shaman, and he took the plant, and then boom, like, and started passing down the knowledge from there, right? So I feel like there was one gifted person who got the knowledge and then passed it down to the next generation. That's my theory.
Yeah, and even if they could see each other, the language barrier.
Agreed.
Of like,
how do you communicate that if you don't speak the same language?
It's like, oh yeah, you kind of doing what we do, but how do I know who you're talking to?
Exactly.
And that we're doing the same things.
Yeah. So
sometimes I think about, this is an aside, but sometimes I think about how there's so much that we don't know about the past, like that we're just trying to piece together through archaeology and, you know, random accounts. I'm not going to get into the whole like Atlantis.
Yeah, we don't want to go down that rabbit
Babylon.
Hole right
now. We're not going to do that today.
Yeah.
We should though, but we're not going to do that today.
That's a whole different episode.
I know. But it's like, what if our current society completely collapsed and like went quiet, and then like humans had to start over and they were like digging up artifacts.
Yeah.
And then like maybe they found like an old video, and you know, like Koreans sing gospel music now. And what if they got it mixed up and they were like, they started gospel music? That has nothing to do with anything that we're talking about.
I didn't know where you were going with that.
But now we're here.
Okay.
But I'm just like, what if we, you know what I mean? Yeah, like we're trying to piece it together, and what if we got it wrong?
Yeah,
and there have been plenty of instances. I can't think of any right now because I'm sleepy.
Yeah.
But there have been plenty of instances where it's like, oh, you thought that was this, but it was really that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. For sure.
But anyways.
I mean, even looking at like how we watch the animal kingdom and we think one thing is like the truth and it's actually the other way, you know.
Well, that was, are you talking about lions?
Yes.
Yeah, that's patriarchy.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at this. How do you know I'm talking about lions? Look at you. Anyway, so again, I think it's just really interesting that there's these commonalities across these different cultures. They're all going into trance states. They're utilizing drums. There's actually like a specific like BPM for like shamanic drumming. Like you can pull it up on Spotify, but it's always like a doom, 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 you know, that kind of like rhythm. Mm-hmm. And it shows up consistently across different cultures. So I think it's super, super dope.
So you brought up BPMs, which I was kind of like, how the fuck do they know the BPM for shamanic drumming?
Well, that's survived. Like people still utilize the drumming that they've learned over time.
Like, yes.
That shamanic drumming has survived.
Well, as I was thinking it, I was like, well, clearly someone from the outside looking in has kind of studied and noticed that there's a pattern and noticed that there's a commonality in BPM.
For sure.
This is where I was going.
Got it.
And so that got me thinking, you know, we're talking about like this very interesting circle that I think we uniquely have experienced of herbalism and indigenous practices and, you know, how we feel about nature, how we heal ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. We were kind of taught that, oh yeah, you know, people thought this and it was actually killing everybody and science proved this and now this is the standard. And like, how we've somehow also kind of looped back around to where science is now saying like, no, like meditation is actually really good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should like really rest. Like you should really go take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you shouldn't have a glass of red wine every night. Like all of these things where it's like science said these things and it was like, that was it. Science said it.
Yeah.
And now it's looping back around.
Absolutely. No, it really ties into the deconditioning episode that we did when I talked about how I used to see science as like the arbiter of truth.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're like starting to see that like loop that you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like we're reevaluating all those things now and actually the indigenous knowledge is being proven to be correct. So
yeah. Where I personally shake out, and I think you're pretty much the same, is that it's not like nature is the standard. Science has its place. But now we're not, it's not either or.
Yeah.
And I think that had kind of been my approach on my journey of realizing that it doesn't have to be either or, that there's room
for both. Absolutely.
So back to shamanism, what does science have to say? What does science contribute to the conversation when it comes to shamanism?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about this already, but there are some theories about why we see those commonalities. One is that, you know, humans that we share this kind of common neurobiology and kind of like cognitive patterns are the same. So that's kind of why you're seeing like across different cultures, the same kind of principles coming up.
Mm.
And then another theory was that we all have, you know, common ancestry from Africa and that basically these practices were established there. And then as migrations happened, those practices kind of continued. So like it was like a central genesis of like the shamanic practices, and then as groups continue to spread, they kept that original kind of belief system, if you will,
which original understanding of the world,
which kind of solves like the language thing, right? Like if everybody was speaking the same language at one point,
right,
and then split off, that is another theory. So I don't know, we don't have the exact answers, but it's fascinating, I think, to just talk
you
about
don't
it.
Have the answers, Sway.
I do want to talk about one culture though in particular. We've mentioned them before on the podcast. I don't remember what episode it was, but we had Kara Lovick on the show, and she talked about her work with the Kiro people who are in Peru in the Andes Mountains. And they're such an interesting culture because the story that they tell about their like history is that they received a message from God telling them to go into the mountains to avoid the incoming Spanish armies. And so by going high into the Andes, they were able to avoid colonization, being conquered, and losing their culture. And they were basically able to preserve all of their shamanic practices. And so there is a gentleman by the name of Alberto Villoldo. He wrote the book Shaman, Healer, Sage. And he also has created basically a condensed version of the shamanic rites. There are 9 rites that the Kiro would use to kind of basically induct their shamans into practices. And so he's taken those and made them available to the world with permission from the Kiro. So yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. And I'm seeing the episode number. It's 79. I'm just kidding. I had it written down. But it's episode 79 that we talked about the Kiro. And it was a really, really amazing and very interesting episode. Another shameless plug for Patreon. Both Mick and I, you know, it's 2024 now. So even though the Kiro are high up in the Andes Mountains, some of them have learned Spanish.
Yeah.
And Kara works with them and does these remote readings and healings. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a couple of translations it has to go through, like English to Spanish to Quechua. And then you get it back. And so we've worked with them and had remote healings done on both of us and one of our daughters who was struggling with asthma. And if you want to hear a detailed telling of that, check out episode 79 and check out our Patreon, patreon.com/chakrasandshotguns. Thank you. Bye. All right.
Yeah. So I guess we're at the time now where I talk a little bit about my journey in shamanism. This is a little like, I don't know, I'm a little nervous about it a little bit.
So take your time, baby. Take your time.
When we dropped the trailer for kind of coming back to video, coming back to the podcast and launching the video portion of the podcast, I said in that trailer that, you know, I'm a shaman, energy healer, and prepper. And like, that was kind of the first time I really like said it out loud, like on something recorded, that like, I am a shaman. As I think for me, I have that conditioning around what a shaman is supposed to look like, or like what even the training for a shaman is supposed to look like. And I think my journey with shamanism does not look like that. And so it has been a little bit of a challenge for me to accept that and really like own that word. I still feel like a little bit weird when people like advertise me as that. But I'll just kind of talk a little bit about what it's been like.
Just to insert myself into your story, I'm sorry. Yeah. But at one point in time, we were told that shamans don't announce themselves.
Yes, that was also part of it.
And so then it was, you know, finding out that you're either part of this lineage or you're moving into this space. Yeah. And do you announce that?
Yes. Yeah. There was also that. But then, you know, you see people, there are people who are in popular culture who will wear the term, right? And so it's like, all right, what does that look like? And so I had to do a lot of like internal meditation, thinking through like, how do I want to show up? And if I felt comfortable even like claiming that. So for me, it started back in 2020, 2021 timeframe. Basically, I got introduced to who would become my shamanism mentor in early 2021. Started having a bunch of like weird experiences in April of 2021. There were basically deposits of items that I later learned were shamanic symbols in our backyard. And I mean, it was very strange in the sense that we have ring cameras all around our house at the time in Dallas, and there were items being dropped in the yard, and I could not see. There were not, like, it wasn't being set off by the motion detector. There was no type of way to see what was happening and how these things were showing up there.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm a spooky bitch, and I used to watch a lot of horror, and I backed off of that, you know, as I'm on this journey, because it's kind of like the vibes don't be right.
Yeah.
And I think kind of at this point, we were about neck and neck on our spiritual journey, even though it wasn't a competition. But this was probably the time where I was like, oh, baby, you're leapfrogging. You're gone. See ya. Have fun with that.
Yeah. There was a severed bird leg, I think, first, that was really like, yo, what is this? And like, I knew immediately that it was something for me. And like, our dog didn't go near it. And like, you know, that would be attractive to a dog. Mm-hmm. But our dog energetically knew, like, that's not for me to mess with. And I went out there and I took a picture of it and I sent it to my mentor. And she was like, oh, that's like a protective shamanic symbol. And I was like, what? What's that? Okay, what's that about? Okay. And so then, like, I got a couple more things kind of dropped off in the backyard before finally I was talking to her, my mentor, and I said to her, I feel this pull to go visit my ancestors at their gravesite, which is about 2 hours away from where we were living in Dallas. She was like, okay, cool. She's like, I'm also getting this message that you need to go a little bit further east past the cemetery to the border of Texas and Louisiana. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I go out. I spend some time at the gravesite with my family's, you know, burial plot, and meditate, leave some offerings for the ancestors, then decide to head out toward this border of Texas, Louisiana, where I was told to go. And so come to find out, this was a state park at the time. And so I get out, kind of scope it out for a little bit, And long story short, I get to this area near the lake that was in this park, and there's this branch that is, I mean, it's like calling to me, like, this is for you. And I take that branch, and then over the course of the next few months, I fashion this into a staff. And like, I have no woodworking experience. This ain't like the 70s where you got wood shop in high school. You know what I'm saying? Shop class.
I really thought I was going to make a birdhouse.
Right. Boy Meets World had me thinking I was going to take shop class. I don't have none of those skills, but I got a knife and I just was, I didn't look this up or nothing. Like, Jim saw me on the patio. Like, what is he out here doing?
He said, I got to get this paint. I was like, okay.
And so I fashioned the staff that I now use as an instrument in my healing work. And as I was building that staff, birds were stopping by, hawks and falcons dropping off feathers in our front yard. And like, I say this and it sounds weird, but I remember my mom was actually visiting because we had just had our second daughter, and she's standing next to me at the window, and we're both looking outside, and we see this falcon swoop right in the front yard, shake a little couple feathers off, and dip up. And she looks at me and she's like, I say, yeah, that's for me. She knew. She was like, go get him. And my mom is not into this woo stuff at all.
A good Christian lady.
She's a good Christian lady. But she knew what time it was. And so like, just seeing that happen, I was like, okay, well, this is something. This means something. Mm-hmm. Over the course of like meditating, spending time with my ancestors, I've come to find out that this is a practice that goes back several generations in my family line. And that there have been multiple shamans throughout time in my lineage. But obviously, my family went through the Atlantic slave trade. And so a lot of those practices were not able to be passed down directly to me from a physical standpoint. And so I've had to learn a lot through spirit, through working with my mentor, and even working with her. Like, she's very like hands off. Like, she'll kind of give me some nuggets and let me kind of go off and do my things. I think even she recognizes that there's a lot I'm supposed to learn from non-physical beings. That's the best way I can say it.
Yeah. I would like to take this time to bring in a little bit more perspective as a spouse, as a partner.
Yeah.
Because I think when we look at the past 4 years of our marriage, it's easy to be like, hey, you know, we both went on the spiritual journey kind of together and we've pretty much been lockstep and it was like really, really easy.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that time was hard, but it was a time where I was just like, I don't know what's happening. And I don't know if, because I think when you go on a spiritual journey like this, there are these times because you have old conditioning, old routines, old religion, and you're trying to figure out how it all fits. Am I going down the right path? Does this make sense? And there were times where I was just like, is he under like a huge delusion? And he's like, the birds. And I'm like, okay. And he was just collecting these things. Now, one thing about Meg, my husband, who I love dearly, even before the spiritual journey, he's a collector. He's always collected things, coins, stamps, baseball cards.
Yeah.
I took him to a flea market one time. That was a huge mistake. And I remember when this little pile of red dust pops up in our driveway.
There were two piles. It was red dust and yellow dust right next to each other.
Okay. Yes. And completely out of sight of a camera.
Yeah.
You know, remember, there's a preparedness part of this podcast. We had cameras all around that house.
Yeah.
And it's completely out of view, like Ocean's 11 or something. And he's like, I got to collect it. And he had it in these little baggies. And I was like, well, this is where, you know, even if you don't understand, you can still be a helpmate. And I said, well, let's find you somewhere to put all of this. All of these things that you're collecting. And so I got him a beautiful basket.
It's right over here.
Mm-hmm. So he could, you know, put those things away.
Yes.
So they weren't here, there, and everywhere. But, you know, you could tell the rest of the story. That red dust
came up later.
And I mean, it was a long play because that was like two and a half years,
something like that.
Before
I needed it and I used it.
And it was so random. And it wasn't, it wasn't even, which I think sometimes we need that confirmation from other people. Yeah. And that's why we get our readings ourselves. It was so like someone else, a third party was like, oh, you need this, this, and this for a ritual. And you were like,
I got red dust.
I have red dust.
Yeah.
Red brick dust.
Yes.
So support. Just support your partner. Say, I don't understand, but how can I help you?
Yeah. So I'll continue the story a little bit. So my mentor, who we've had on the show, I don't know why I keep saying my mentor, Kira Buckley. If you've listened to the show for a while, you've heard her on the show a couple of times. So she tells me about the Munaki, which is the system of rites that the Kiro have passed down through Alberto Viodo. And so she takes me through those 9 rites over like the course of 6 to 8 months. And it was really cool because it was in this time where we were transitioning or trying to transition from Dallas to Los Angeles. And she had spent time in Dallas and was living in Los Angeles. And so I got to do some of the rites in Dallas, some in Los Angeles, which was like super dope because it was like this time of transition and I'm transitioning into like this new space spiritually. So meant a lot to me to kind of do it during that time. But I will tell you, I did have a little bit of imposter syndrome that came up like after that. It's like I graduated from my rites and it's like, okay, what now? What do I do? I'll tell you, it sounds a little bit, to me, it felt like there are people who will go like do a certificate program at Harvard and then they'll be like, I'm a Harvard graduate. That's kind of how I felt. I
was like Kim Kardashian.
Sure. There's a lot of people who do this, right? They got that certificate. They're like, I went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. And it's like, am I a shaman? Like, I guess. It's like, when I was doing my rites, my boy was like, so what is it? Are you a shaman now? And I was like, I think so. Like, I don't have a degree with like a, you know, like in a little frame that says.
He's a shaman now, y'all. Exactly.
So I think I had to do like a lot of internal work to just kind of like, you know, figure that out. And I think when I think about it as well, I don't even know if my ancestors used the word shaman, right? Like, I think, like, we talked about it before when we were going through the different cultures. Mm-hmm. One of the words that's used in Africa is Sangoma, and that's a Southern African term for shaman, right? So I don't even know if that was the word they used or not. Like, I trace my roots back to Western Africa.
Right.
I don't know what their word was. And so I was also kind of, like, trying to deal with that. And then I had an experience with an intuitive, and she was saying, you don't really even have to call yourself a shaman because in a lot of ways that word can limit you. And you're more than just that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing I was kind of grappling with. Like, I don't feel like I'm a shaman, but do I even want to like limit myself by that word, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like this weird like back and forth. So again, it's not something I use a lot. You're not going to see me on the podcast and like hosted by Jen and Shaman Mick. Like I'm not going to do that. But like,
put on your license plate. I hate a vanity plate. Sorry.
That's big out here. But anyway, so that's kind of where I'm at. With some of that work.
I think there's a lot of lessons there, though.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
One, I think a spiritual awakening can be extremely powerful. And you may even have this feeling of like, oh, I figured it all out. I know what it all means. I know how it all works together. And then life will be like punching the good. And you're like, wait, imposter syndrome. I thought that was a corporate America thing. And it's like, no, psycholite got you. Yeah. And the journey is just starting. Like the healing is just starting. Yeah. Figuring out your place is just starting. Yeah. And then also, I feel like I think we both go through this. And I've talked to a lot of people in like in readings and whatnot, and they go through this as well, is that we've spent our whole lives thinking.
Yes.
Thinking through everything. Yes. And like, am I a shaman? Am I not a shaman? What does that mean? Mm-hmm. Where do I fit? Is it limiting? Mm-hmm. Am I limitless? But what does limitless mean? Mm-hmm. Where do I go from now? Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. You're just like trying to figure out, which is a very thinking term, what your place is in the world now.
Yeah.
And I'm currently going through that. And it can spiral you out. It's just like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And what should I be doing? And should I be doing something different? And should I be thinking about this differently? Yeah. And like, you're just supposed to feel and intuit.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I think when I'm most tapped into my gifts, when I'm at my most powerful shaman level, is when I'm not thinking. Mm. It's when I just react. I get an impulse. Like, I remember we were at Sedona for the retreat, and there was several people who had been taking plant medicine, and this one woman was having this like almost like a bad trip. Like she was getting very emotional. She was like seeing her mom who had passed away and was like having this like really intense emotional experience. And I had this instinct to go and wash her feet. I was like, I need to go wash her feet. But I was like, that's like my thinking brain came in and said, that's weird.
That's fucking weird.
Like, that's weird. And Kira was there and she went over and started washing her feet. And I said, so that's what a shaman's supposed to do right now.
And I might have even been like, why are you washing their half of feet? See?
Yeah. But when I listen to that voice and I'm in session with people and I'm like healing and like listening to just like whatever pops up and I just do the things, like people have these transformative reactions to what's happening. And so it's like getting out of this mind that allowed me to get an engineering degree and an MBA that like took me to what I thought was my terminal degree. And now I'm actually getting a new degree, but it's using a completely different skill set, right? Like it's this feeling energy, this more feminine, intuitive energy that like I just was not used to using. And that's what's been serving me the best in this space.
I feel like it's if you got in a car and they switched the gas and the brake.
Absolutely.
And now it's like a whole different way of functioning.
Or just like driving a car in England on the other side, right? Like you're, instead of being on the left side, like you're on the right side. And like you're, like it's the same deal, right?
So
that's been my journey. And going back to the drumming piece, I wanted to just speak on that because I have had this strong like affinity to drumming like since I've kind of gone into space. And we talked about it a little bit in the Akashic Records episode about how I had an Akashic Records reader talk about I needed to spend time listening to drumming, spending more time with drumming. And I actually went in, I have a couple of drums, three drums now, but I bought a djembe drum and Jen got me a drumming lesson in LA to like learn how to play it. So I go to this drumming lesson, and when I first got there, I was like in that thinking mind, okay, like trying to get it right, and like make sure I was like competing almost, like I want to be good at this.
Because you're also in your head, because out of the two of us, you're not the music. You didn't play instruments growing up.
I did not. I don't have any musical training. This is not something. I don't know how to read music, any of that. So I'm in there, and I'm like, all right, am I going to be able to keep up? And the way the class worked, it was just like, this class had probably been going for months. And like, so there were people who were in their first class, like me. There were some people who were like in their 15th class, right? So like, there's different skill levels. And so I'm in there, I'm like, all right, trying to think. And I was doing terribly. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to let go and just go. And so I start going and I'm just hitting my drum and I'm like keeping up. I'm like killing it. But like, I'm trying not to like get out of the zone. I'm like, okay, you're doing good, but don't get out of the zone. And so anyway, at the end of the class, I go up to the instructor and I pay. And I said, this is my first time ever playing a drum. And his like jaw dropped. He was like, and I was
just like that.
And so his jaw dropped. And yeah, he was just like, that's amazing. Like, you should come back. You know, I haven't been back, but but I should go back at some point.
And I never went back again.
But I feel a lot of confidence in that. And it just kind of helped propel me, I think, further. Now I have a drum that I use to take people on journeys. I'll bring it to different sessions. I have a hand one that I use. And then that's great. So, yeah.
You went from playing no instruments. I was a drum major of my high school band, state champions. Thank you. To having more instruments in here than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Because you were feeling.
I'm feeling. Yeah.
We have to feel. You know, this has been very therapeutic, this episode for me. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about? Look, you're the guest. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about that you want to leave us with?
Honestly, I would say sometimes it's best to just forget all the things that you've learned and to just go with the sensations in your body. That's what I've had to do. Like, thinking that knowledge comes from being in a classroom with a physical teacher was my like conditioning. And this has been the complete opposite of that. And I've had to have confidence in what I've learned outside of a physical classroom with a physical teacher and stand in that, right?
Yeah.
Because people could pull your card and be like, well, you don't have a degree in this. You don't have any certification. You didn't go spend time in the rainforest with
people. People love a certificate.
You know what I mean? Like, and I've had to just be like, I feel good about it anyway. This is what I do.
All right. Well, I think we should leave it on that.
All right.
Being my Oprah bag. I think we should leave it there. That's the show. Friendly reminder, I've said it a couple times already, but check out our Patreon, patreon.com/chakrasandshotguns. I mean, there's really good stuff. And we're like rolling out new stuff all the time. Like we're about to roll out something new right now.
Yeah.
So you don't want to miss that. So do that.
And finally, guys, if you're loving the show, please subscribe and give us 5 stars wherever you listen.
Namaste.